Tom Daschle and Trent Lott are two of the most prominent senators in recent history. Both served in their party's leadership and have almost 60 years of service between them. Their congressional tenure saw the Reagan tax cuts, a deadlocked Senate, the Clinton impeachment, 9/11, and the Iraq War. Despite the tumultuous times and despite their very real ideological differences, they have always maintained a positive working relationship. Together, they've written the book Crisis Point, Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America, a call to action for bringing the country out of its current stalemate. Using both historical and current examples, the senators show how debate and opposing opinions shaped our country and are necessary for its future. Again, the name of the book is Crisis Point, Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Senators Trent Lott and Tom Daschle to the roundtable this morning. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Good to be with you, Joe.
Senator Lott, let us begin with you of how this project came about.
Well, first of all, Tom and I worked together for several years. He is the Democratic leader and me is the Republican leader during the 90s and as the turn of the century. And we developed a strong relationship. I trusted him, respected him, and we became friends. The time that we served was filled with difficulty, 9/11, the anthrax attack, a 50-50 Senate, and, of course, the impeachment trial. But during that time, we still managed to get things done, like balancing the budget and tax cuts and welfare reform, military pay raise, a lot of issues. And now we see the gridlock and the difficulty in terms of people being involved in the political process, civic responsibility. And we just felt like that maybe some of the things we learned and some ideas we have for the future would be the good idea for a book. But the focus of the book is not to be say, oh, look what we did. The focus is, here are some ideas that we think would help to break the gridlock and help with civic responsibility all across America.
So, Senator Daschle, let's start off with what caused the gridlock, in your opinion. What happened?
Oh, a lot of things happened, Joe, along the way. No pivotal single thing happened that you can point to. But over time, what has happened is we've bashed Washington for so long, nobody wants to stay there anymore. People leave on Thursday, they come back on Tuesday, and we try to run the country on Wednesday. So people just aren't there. This year, we're only going to be in session around 110 days, 2 days a week. You can't run a country this complicated with that short a time in town. Money is driving it. Too much money, too much time spent raising money. That's a huge problem. The social media has also created a different dynamic, a different environmental landscape. It's become uglier and more confrontational, more polarized, and frankly, less factual. And so all those issues and many more have created a problem that we've got to address. The way we gerrymander these days, members of Congress pick their voters rather than voters picking their congressmen. And that's got to be something we address. So we look at it as electoral reform, congressional reform, and commitment to service and commitment to our country. Those are the three categories of things that we think are so necessary.
And of course, there is, you can look at the men and women who are running for office, who are in office, and they shoulder some of the blame, do they not?
Absolutely. We all do. We can point fingers, but that doesn't do anybody any good. What we've got to do is all recognize we all have a responsibility. The voters, the members of Congress, the President of the United States, we're all in this together, and we all have plenty of blame to go around. The question is, how do we fix it?
And Senator Lott, when you look at how you fix it, is it something that is going to take a long time, and meaning it's a period of transition, or are there some fundamental things that can be done to quickly change this?
Oh, it'll take some time, but it shouldn't take too long. We need some men and women of good will and leaders that will step up and do some things that are very important in order to turn the process around. Number one is communicate. You know, the president and the Congress don't communicate very much anymore. Republicans and Democrats don't communicate very much anymore. They need to work to develop a relationship and lay out an agenda to how to get things done. Now, we recommend some commonsensical things. Tom talked about how they come and stay just very brief part of the week, and then they're gone. We recommend that they work 5 days a week, 3 weeks a month. They can still go home on weekends or go home that fourth week and work their districts or their state. We also suggest that they go back to regular order. The old committee process now is kind of, you know, out of practice. Go back to Senate bill to the subcommittee, have hearings, investigations, have markups, have amendments, have debate, go to the floor of the Senate, the floor of the Congress. And by doing it that way, you're more likely to get a result and one that hopefully will be signed by the president.
You have a section in the book, Senator Daschle, that is on chemistry, and you quote your colleague Ted Kennedy, who said politics is chemical. How so, and how do you change the chemistry?
That's such a great question, and it's so important. Chemistry matters. If you don't have a relationship with someone, it's hard to communicate. And if you can't communicate, you can't cooperate, and then ultimately build the trust required to find common ground. So it's all connected. Chemistry, in part, is relationship building. But that's the problem today, Joe. If people aren't there in Washington to understand the importance of those relationships, you don't have the chemistry to create that environment that's so conducive for getting things done. That's really what we're missing. There's a wall, invisible wall sometimes, between the White House and the Congress, between Republicans and Democrats, even between the House and the Senate. We don't have the chemistry that is so essential. And that is really one of the things that we spend a lot of time in our book trying to address with recommendations on how to change it.
You know, we recommend that they bring their families to Washington. We used to do that. And by doing that, we had time to get to know each other. Our families, and our wives and spouses knew each other. Our kids played together. And that develops a relationship that transcends party. And they don't do that much anymore. Tom and I used to have occasional joint meetings where all the Republicans and the Democrats would meet together in the old Senate chamber and just have a freewheeling discussion. And almost every time we did that, we came out with a result that was better than anything else we had thought of. So we recommend that they do those things, too. You know, members of Congress now, I think maybe as many as 50 of them sleep in their offices. You know, I really don't think that's a good idea. It's somewhat demeaning, and it's just one of the things that contributes to the lack of relationships.
We joke it's a new form of public housing. We don't think that's a good idea.
It's interesting when you look at the history, because the two of you could have a meeting and it would be considered to be a productive step. And now if two members of opposite parties have a meeting, it can be considered traitorous.
Well, that's exactly right. The bases on the far right and the far left do as much as they can to discourage this kind of communication and this chemistry that we've been talking about. And that's really the problem today. You are penalized if you try to find common ground. Some believe that common ground is capitulation, but you can't run a country this complicated without doing exactly that. Our founding fathers understood that. We had a lot of differences of opinion about what kind of a country this is going to be, but they found the common ground to build the kind of institutions that we've now relied upon for 220 years. We need to do that now just as enthusiastically as they did.
The name of the book is Crisis Point, Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America. Our guests this morning, Senator Trent Lott and Senator Tom Daschle. Do you think, Senator Lott, that the two of you would be as successful as you were then in the climate that we are in now?
You know, to be honest, I'm not sure we would. You have different people. It's more complicated now than it was. For instance, both parties have moved to the extremes. The Democratic Party is much more liberal. The Republican Party is much more conservative. There's very few in the middle, not that I was ever there. Also, compromise has become a dirty word. Well, compromise is really the art of government. If you have 100 senators from all over the country, all kind of backgrounds, you're not going to get your position in the purest form ever. You've got to find a way to work together. We worked with Clinton and with the Democrats when we got the balanced budget. Was it easy? No. But was it right for the country? You know, we need reform of a lot of our different programs in Washington. Entitlement programs are just really exploding the budget. We need to look at our tax policy. We've got corporations that are leaving the country, going to Ireland because of our corporate tax policy. But it also is not just about the two of us or who's in the Congress. It's also about civic responsibility. The people play a part in this. They're the ones that elect them, after all. So we talk about that, and you're concerned about money that you mentioned earlier. We recommend that we consider a single primary to determine our party nominees for president, or at least a regional primary. We recommend Saturday votes instead of Tuesday. Why do we vote on Tuesday? There's a history on that, but I think it would be a lot easier and would encourage people to vote more if it were on a Saturday. And last but not least, should we look at maybe shortening the length of the campaigns? That would help control the cost, and I think would help hold people's attention more.
On that particular issue, Senator Daschle, the length of the campaign and attempt to shorten it. So we are just starting to vote now after 2 years of campaigning. What kind of lasting damage has that done, do you think?
I think it's been extraordinarily corrosive, because what it does is drive people to the extremes. You also see more and more irresponsible rhetoric. You've got this incredible confrontational environment within which the country is supposed to govern and address all the challenges we face, not to mention the peer pressure people have to hold the line and not compromise and not be cooperative. So it's been extraordinarily corrosive. I think the very core of our democratic institutions are at stake here. Whether or not we can govern adequately, whether we can do the kinds of things necessary to ensure that we can move this country forward, not to mention, by the way, what kind of message we send to the rest of the world. They are absolutely apoplectic. The rest of the world just doesn't understand how it is that we can be this dysfunctional, as great a country as we are. So I think the stakes are much higher than most people fully appreciate. That's the title of the book, Crisis Point, and I think it's aptly so.
Mm. I'm interested by what you said, because I agree with you. I understand the point, Senator Watt, about the people, and they are the ones that vote. But the past 2 years of the campaign, no one has cast a vote, and yet we have had the sideshow, for want of a better term, over the last 2 years of candidates in both parties jockeying for position. So by shortening that, you can take care of that problem, I assume.
Well, it would help. I've not been, terribly exasperated by the length of the campaign and what's been going on. I always felt like, well, it would work itself out once people started the voting. But I have to tell you, I'm getting worried. Both parties. I mean, when you look at who's leading on the Republican side and Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side, you have to ask yourself what's happening here. I know people are frustrated, but this is a very important election this year. We need some people that will not just be mad and frustrated, but people that will have a vision of where they want to take this country. What are they going to do to change the dynamics that has led to this gridlock and the lack of participation by the people in form of voting? One of the things we recommend in the book in terms of understanding your government and civic responsibility, we recommend that everybody, when they finish high school or reach 18 or so, that they have 1 year of public service as a National Guardsman or fighting fires in the West or Peace Corps. And I think they would get a whole different perspective on the government and how it works and what their role is.
There's another element, too, and we've talked about it in the book quite a bit, and that is the belief that unless people take responsibility for voting and recognize that low voter turnout just exacerbates the problem, it turns the power and the opportunity to pick our leadership over to the extremes. So it's counterintuitive when you've got a favorability rating of around 20% in Washington. People don't want to vote. But I think that the counterintuitive fact is we've got to vote. We've got to participate. We've got to take ownership of this country, and that's up to the voters. So we're hoping that we can really see a good voter turnout and bring this whole debate back to the middle where it belongs.
Give him the statistics on recent voting turnout, Tom.
38% in 2014, 38% of the people voted. That means almost two out of three eligible voters chose not to vote in 2014. What does that say about the quality of our democracy and the ability that the American people have to pick our leadership? We can't, by default, turn this over to the extremes.
And, of course, that is part of the problem, because right now you're looking at the extremes who are leading in the polls, and you look at a Donald Trump, you look at a Bernie Sanders, and you say, okay, is this helping in bringing people together, and how can we start to address this crisis point if this is where we're going to start in the voting in 2016?
Well, that is the problem, and the coarseness of the debate really concerns me. When you call people a liar on the floor of the Senate or in your campaign commercials, and people that are similarly related philosophically and are friends, they're running these super PAC negative ads attacking them. You know, where is the responsibility to try to run a campaign that tells the people what you really want to do, and you don't just try to tear down your opponent? Now, I know politics is a tough business. I've been through it. But this is about as weird as I've ever seen it this year.
And I assume you would agree, Senator Daschle.
I totally agree. It's weird and then some. And it's, you know, we don't know where this is all going to take us. But I do know that we've got to be concerned about the direction of our country. We've faced some incredible challenges as we look forward. We can go through the list, but I don't think that's necessary. We know how much of a challenge for leadership it's going to be. But we need constructive leadership. We need people who can build bridges. We need people who can inspire and aspire to greater things for our country. We don't see that on the landscape like we know we should. And, you know, we've benefited in the past. Every time we've had a real crisis, somebody has stepped up to the plate. It's a, you know, it's just been so fortunate for our country to have a Lincoln and all the other leaders of our country in the past. We need that again now.
Yeah, you know, we've had a lot of difficult times going back to the founding of our country and through the Civil War period and difficult times, you know, in the 1900s. But this is America, and we can come to terms with our problems, and we can find solutions. The main thing we need, men and women of goodwill that will provide leadership.
Senators Trent Lott and Tom Daschle are our guests this morning. We're talking about the new book, Crisis Point, Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Tom Daschle and Trent Lott are two of the most prominent senators of recent time. Both served in their respective parties' leadership positions from the 1990s into the current century, and they have almost 60 years of service between them. We're talking about their new book, Crisis Point, Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America. We're looking at a campaign where, especially with Donald Trump, where you have a candidate who is repeatedly saying things that are more outrageous day after day. And Senator Lott, you mentioned this a moment ago, that I think you thought, like most of us thought, that it would work itself out and it would, that problem, if you will, would take care of itself. It has not. So where does that leave us, even to think about down the road? Because what it seems to be telling us is that voters are looking from somebody from the outside.
Well, I have a concern about that, too. I mean, being President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief, you don't need somebody that's learning on the job. That's one reason why I support a candidate that has been in Congress, that's been in the private sector, that's a governor, John Kasich. He has done the job. He knows how to do it. And I really get nervous about bringing in somebody completely on the outside. Now, people, again, are upset about the fact that things are not happening in Washington or they're happening the wrong way. But I'm very leery of bringing in a new kid to do that job.
Joe, I would say, too, that I agree with Trent completely on that. And I would say, first of all, we haven't cast a vote yet.
That's right.
And if you look at the national polling, it's interesting. Trump's unfavorables are 2-1 to his favorables. The American people have already caught on. So I don't know where this is all going to take us. I think Trent's exactly right. We're looking for people who can fix the problem. And the more un-Washington you can be these days, the more the American people are intrigued by your candidacy. But just as we wouldn't expect someone who's never performed a heart operation to do some heart transplant on me or anybody else, we wouldn't want somebody with absolutely no experience to help run the country. That isn't what we need. We need people who understand good governance, who understand how to bring people together, who understand the importance of good executive governmental actions. Those kinds of things are what have provided us with the strength we've seen in the past. We need those qualities again now.
Well, Donald Trump may have made his first big mistake by saying he wasn't going to participate in the debate because he didn't want to be questioned by Megyn Kelly, a woman that would be in one of the moderators. I don't know why he came to that conclusion. I don't think it's smart.
When you look at the candidacy of John Kasich, I find this fascinating because from the very beginning, he was considered to be the most moderate, even-keeled, and a candidate that could probably go the distance. Again, you make the point, and it's a very important point to make, that a vote hasn't been cast yet. But being a part of that campaign, Senator Lott, what have you seen the problems to be? What are the problems in Governor Kasich getting those messages across?
Well, first of all, I think he's moderate in demeanor. He does care about people that need help. But I know his voting record when he was in Congress. He had a solid conservative voting record. But part of it is this outsider thing that we're talking about. And, you know, the unique personality of Donald Trump. And then even of Ted Cruz. So it's made it very hard, partially just because we have so many candidates, and a lot of them are really good candidates. Several of them are great friends that I've had for years. But some of the more traditional, if you will, candidates have not been able to make through. Maybe that will begin to happen when we see Iowa, but then maybe more importantly, New Hampshire, where the people actually vote in a more traditional way. And then, of course, we head to the South. Hopefully we'll help solve this and get it worked out.
On the Democratic side, Senator Daschle, do you believe that the Hillary Clinton campaign is in any crisis?
Well, I wouldn't call it a crisis. I think she would be the first to tell you that she is in a real competitive political environment, not unlike 2008. I think Bernie Sanders has surprised a lot of people with the energy and with the amount of traction he's gotten politically, especially in the Northeast. But clearly, this is a competitive race this year. Everybody expected Hillary to have an easier time of it. That isn't the case. Again, I think goes to Trent's point. People are looking for those who are not as connected to Washington, and Hillary Clinton has been connected to Washington for the last 30 years.
And certainly Senator Sanders has been as well. Is that race with Martin O'Malley included too, that is that a race where you do look at a Democratic process where voters really have a choice?
Well, voters certainly have a choice, and Bernie Sanders is making the most of that choice right now. I'm a little surprised that Governor O'Malley hasn't gotten more traction. He seems to be an attractive, articulate candidate with a good record as governor, but it does seem to be, in large measure, a race that has elevated Bernie Sanders' stature nationally, and certainly as he presents himself as a political candidate, so for president. So it's a race that I think is too close to call at this point, at least in the first two competitive events in Iowa and New Hampshire. We'll have to see how it plays out as we go south.
You know, it's so ironic. We've got the leading candidate on the Republican side is basically saying we want the least possible government. And then on the Democratic side, the leading, well, one of the serious ones, Bernie Sanders, is saying we want more and more government. So there are some serious divides between the thinking of the American people now.
But I think what Trent's pointing out is what's going on in the primaries. You have the bases, the far left and the far right bases that are really the most vocal, the most active, and the most visible, and therein lies the tremendous polarization that we're seeing in the country politically.
Senator Tom Daschle and Senator Trent Lott join us this morning. They're talking about their new book, Crisis Point, Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America. The book is published by Bloomsbury. One of the things, and maybe I'm misinterpreting this, and I apologize if I am, but one of the differences between the two parties is that on the Democratic side, you have three candidates who have differences in ideology, differences in platform, and differences of way they're going to go about solving the problems of the country. Not to dismiss a large swath of people who are supporting the front runner on the Republican side, but for much of the country, they're looking at those who are polling highest on the Republican side as not just candidates who are perhaps ideologically different than them, but also, quite frankly, a little crazy.
Well, you know, my own son likes the fact that Donald Trump tells the media where to go and makes them like it. You know, he likes an aggressive businessman, and there are a lot of small businessmen and women of all sorts, and professional people that are concerned about the size and the aggressiveness of the government, the number of regulations, tax policy. So there is that feeling, particularly on the Republican side. But the question is, how much is enough, and how can you really do anything about it?
Do you believe that, because we're under a completely different test, both of you have run campaigns where I assume if you said anything similar to what Donald Trump has said in this campaign of shooting people in the streets or making fun of the disabled or whatever the case may be, that your campaign would have been gone.
Donald Trump has defied all laws of political gravity, and it's just hard to figure, except, again, as I say, we haven't cast the first vote, Joe, and I think that's part of the message here. We don't really know whether this is for real or not yet. We've got to see just how this all plays out. I can't imagine the vast majority of the American people are going to want a president of the United States with that kind of rhetorical background, with that kind of approach to governance, and with that divisive agenda. I mean, that just isn't who we are. So, you know, I think the symbolism right now is, do you want a wall or do you want the Statue of Liberty? And, you know, symbolically, Donald Trump says, let's build the wall. I think the vast majority of the American people say, we want to stick with the Statue of Liberty.
So, gentlemen, let us go to the point of your book as we start to wrap up, and that is that we can make changes. And I guess the question I have right off the bat is, given where we are right now, do politicians, do the American people, does our culture have the motive, have the impetus to make these changes that you call for in the book?
We wouldn't have written the book had it not been our strong belief that the vast majority of the American people want better governance. They want to end the dysfunction. And as Trent said so well, you know, we don't claim that we've got all the answers, but we can look back and say, look, these are the things that we think could work. We think they deserve your careful consideration. We want to see others join us in the call for electoral reform, for congressional reform, for a call to service. Those kinds of things are so critical. And if you care about our country, whether it's this set of proposals or others, the time has come for us to come together and figure out a way to solve the problems we're facing today.
And, you know, we've talked to a lot of different groups, and I've been a little bit surprised, quite frankly, how many of them react favorably to the idea that they do need to spend more time in Washington, actually go through the committee process and have debate and have votes. But one of the ones that gets the most positive reaction is the one-year public service. People say, that's a good idea. It would help our young people understand just what it means to be an American and how great your opportunities are if you work and take advantage of them.
The thing that probably the three of us have in common is that being a member of the media, you two being politicians, that we're both disliked by the American people and have been for a long time. Will there always be an undercurrent of that we just have to accept?
Well, you know, I'd say not. Trent and I talk about what happened right after 9/11. You know, it's hard to believe the congressional favorability after 9/11 was in the high 80s. People, over 80% of the American people said they liked what Congress was doing. Well, that isn't because of what we did. It's because they saw politicians and government working together, people declaring themselves not to be Republicans or Democrats, but Americans, addressing the challenges we faced right after that crisis and doing something about it. The American people yearn for that again. So I don't think there's an inevitability that media and the people in politics and government today have to be given this low rating indefinitely. There's real hope if we just put our nose to the grindstone and get some things done.
What are the two of you proud of that you accomplished in your time together in Washington?
Well, first of all, in spite of the difficult things we had to deal with, we kept our eye on how we do it and do it in a way that we had respect for each other and the American people felt like we did it in the right way and the best of our ability. We kept a civil discourse, but also we got legislative results. I've mentioned some of those things earlier. We're right across the board done things like telecommunications reform, safe drinking water, portability of insurance. That's not political or philosophical. Who doesn't want safe drinking water? Ask the people of Flint, Michigan. some of my conservative friends say, I don't want any government. I say to them, look, if you don't like the size of government, the size of the deficit, the number of regulations or the way a department or an agency is working, it takes an affirmative action to give direction and change that. So just saying no, do nothing, as some of the what I call the hell no caucus in the House of Representatives, their attitude is, that is not the way to get your government to function and provide the result you're looking for.
So I get the sense that you're both hopeful.
Well, we are hopeful. We think there are good people on both sides of the aisle who want to work together. But we need leadership. We need to create an environment for better chemistry. We need to address the challenges we face. If we do that, there's absolutely no question. Our country can get through this just as we've done so many other times in the past.
Thank you, Joe, for having us on your show and helping us get this message out there in America. We hope it's infectious and people do react to it.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for being a part of the program.
Our pleasure.
Again, the name of the book is Crisis Point, Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America. It is by Senators Trent Lott and Tom Daschle. The book is published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.